Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello and welcome to this edition of World Weekly from the Financial Times. I'm Gideon Rachman, and today we're looking at the outcome of the US midterm elections. With me in the studio is Jeff Dyer, our former correspondent in the US, and on the line from Washington, the FT's James Politi. Jeff, a lot of the commentary on the election says both sides have some reason for satisfaction. The Democrats won the House, the Republicans strengthened in the Senate. Do you share that view?
Well, certainly as I was watching it at the time unfold, it seemed like a mixed bag. The Democrats won the House, but the Republicans made some quite important gains in the Senate. But in the cold light of day, it seems to me that actually it's quite a significant victory for the Democrats. I mean, just look at the numbers. There was really only one national race, and that was for the House. And it does seem as if the Democrats won that in terms of the popular vote by 9%. That is a huge victory by any historic terms. That's essentially a blowout. That's the one kind of concrete measure we have of political temperature in the US, and that suggests the Democrats did very well. And by winning the House, they've won subpoena power. They've got the gavel. So they are now able to hold hearings and subpoena witnesses and documents and start holding the Trump administration to account for some of the things they've been doing that have really got away with in the last 2 years. That's also very important. And then the one final thing, I think, to look at the industrial Midwest, the kind of Rust Belt states. In 2016, the big surprise that Trump pulled off was he broke through the so-called blue wall. He won states like Michigan and Pennsylvania. He won Ohio and he won Wisconsin. The Democrats won Michigan, they won Pennsylvania, they won Wisconsin, and they won the Senate race in Ohio. They lost the governor's race. So the Democrats did very well in those states that are likely to be the central battleground, the Electoral College in 2020. So I think in the cold light of day, I'd say it's a much better day for the Democrats than it is for the Republicans, and certainly it is for the Trump White House.
James, do you share that assessment?
I partially share that assessment. I think that the Democratic gains in the suburbs are very significant because they show that Trump is losing steam among women, among more affluent voters, and in part of the core of the more moderate conservative Republican vote. And I think that's a pretty important backlash, which will be reassuring to the Democrats. But then if you look at what happened in Florida, for instance, hopes that the Democrats could hold the Senate there and gain the governorship in Florida were dashed. And I think that's quite a blow, especially considering how important Florida is in the presidential map for 2020. And we saw that Trump still has an ability to energize his core base of supporters when he goes out there on the campaign trail. And we saw that in the Senate races that they were able to defend. I mean, you know, Trump went out there and he was able to get Republican rural voters and his base out to the polls. And it meant that there was no magical blue wave sweeping across the country. Certainly in the House, the Democrats did well. And of course, you can imagine how terrible for the Democrats it would have been if they hadn't been able to capture the House. But nonetheless, I think the Democrats were hoping to make even greater inroads into Republican territory than they did. And that has a bit of a cautionary tale for 2020, which will be an entirely different race.
Sure. And of course, Jeff, the race for 2020 does sort of begin now. How do you respond to, in a way, James's pushback where he says, yeah, okay, they did well in some of the Rust Belt states, but Florida and Ohio, crucial. Florida's now looking like a red state, I suppose. And Ohio, well, as you say, they won the Senate, but not the governorship.
Well, Florida was absolutely the worst part of the night for the Democrats. But even then, those races were incredibly close. I mean, they lost by 0.5% in both the races, I think, or maybe 0.5% in the Senate race, 1% in the governorship race. So they're still, Florida, as it has been for really most of my adult life, is still razor tight. I wouldn't say it's a red state. It's just it's a very, very close state. If you look at some of the Senate races that they lost, the poll suggested they might be competitive in some of these races. But when you look at what happened in 2016, it gives you a sense of just how difficult some of these races were for the Democrats. So the Democrats actually won in West Virginia last night. And in 2016, Trump won West Virginia by 42%. In Missouri and Indiana, where they lost by 5 to 10%, they lost to Trump by 19 percentage points in 2016. So those were incredibly tough races for the Democrats to compete in. And maybe they're a little bit over-optimistic than the managing expectations, because those were really
And there was
really
a lot of
reasons.
Excitement which wasn't, in the end, quite fulfilled about this character Beto O'Rourke in Texas. But
even he did actually a little bit better than most of the polls and the run-up to the race were saying. And I think James's point is very crucial about these urban areas. I mean, just to give a list of some of the places where the Democrats picked up House seats, just because some of these cities, Charleston, South Carolina, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, Richmond, Virginia, Orange County in California, and Dallas. These are all places which really, you know, certainly since Ronald Reagan, those have been absolutely bedrock Republican suburban areas, which the Republicans are able to win victories year after year, election after election. And the Democrats picked up very significant victories there.
So Trump might be turning off American suburbia, essentially.
Absolutely. He's turning off educated suburban voters, particularly women, many of whom in previous cycles would have voted Republican.
Now, James, I mean, the Democrats, however, still have a big strategic choice to make about 2020, their voters do in the primaries. Do they go progressive? Do they go for a left-wing candidate like a Bernie Sanders or a younger version of that? Or do they say we need to nominate a moderate to try and win from the center? How do you think they're going to assess that choice after tonight?
Well, I think in a way there is kind of a third way, and we saw that third way in Beto O'Rourke in Texas. I mean, he is on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and he was able to channel a lot of energy among youth voters, minority voters, to kind of force a close and tight race in Texas, which is very difficult. He got people out to the polls. But at the same time, he was very careful not to take on Trump head on. He's sort of the new generation, but he was trying to thread the needle a little bit and not be seen as a sort of diehard Bernie Sanders type liberal, because I think he knows that that doesn't necessarily play well in the race for 2020. The question, of course, is, you know, will O'Rourke himself think about running for president now that he lost the Senate seat, so he's sort of unshackled from that. But I think there's a way for the Democrats to try and find a suitable candidate that can represent both sides. And I think that with Trump on the ballot this time on the other side, that there will be more forces sort of uniting them than dividing them, provided that they find the right candidate that can bring the party together. I mean, that's not going to be easy because there are these two souls. A lot will depend on the attitude in Congress, on Capitol Hill. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, assuming she'll be Speaker, will have to decide whether to be a sort of deal maker with Trump on issues like prescription drugs and infrastructure and possibly trade, where there is some commonality, or whether she's going to focus exclusively on the sort of accountability agenda, so investigations, subpoenas, holding the administration to task for sort of corruption, possibly impeachment, even though House Democrats insist that that's not their top priority. And that might give us a sense of where things are going, and certainly we'll have a clearer picture once the field of candidates begins to emerge.
Okay. And Jeff, I mean, as for the Republicans, do you think it's safe to say now that they really are the party of Donald Trump now?
I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, the people that did win these Senate races, and they did do very well in the Senate last night, those candidates did so by sticking very close to Trump. Trump came into their states and campaigned for them. I'm thinking about Indiana, I'm thinking about South Dakota, Missouri. You know, those Senate Republicans have seen that the way to do well, both in primaries and in these general elections in the Republican Party, is to stick very close to Trump. It is now very much the party of Trump. The question for the president is, he's adopted a political strategy, particularly in this election, but really since he became president, of just speaking entirely to the base, speaking to the up to 40% of the population who really do seem to like his message and like his style, and really not trying to do anything to speak beyond that base to attract people more in the middle ground, even more moderate Republicans. Does he look at this election and say, I was vindicated because we won those Senate races, which is certainly what he's saying in public now? Or does he look at the popular vote in the House and saw that he lost by 9% and think, if I don't do something different the next couple of years, I could get beaten very badly in 2020?
It's not even clear to me, though, that he's that strategic. I mean, he's such a visceral president, isn't he?
He is, but in an odd way, he is not necessarily a very ideological figure, so he could quite easily decide to adopt very different policies if he wanted to, because it suited his particular interests. So he could decide that it might suit him in 2020 quite well to, say, pick up the infrastructure issue, which is something where he could find common ground with Democrats, could get something done. And there's a chance that he will see that that is the way for him to butter himself for 2020. Or he might decide to completely play with the culture war rhetoric, the anti-immigration rhetoric, almost the demagoguery one has to say over the last couple of weeks, and say if he just keeps stimulating his base, that will keep him competitive in 2020. It's not at all clear which way he's going to go.
My guess, personally, is that he'll go for the demagoguery. But what do you think, James? I mean, I guess the big question beyond the positioning of the parties and even beyond 2020, which kind of touches everything we've been discussing, is this increasingly bitter partisan United States that we've seen over the last couple of years, with serious people even using words like civil war, is that going to get worse? Or now that the Democrats have something to cling on to, might we get to a more, inverted commas, normal sort of American politics? What do you think?
I think that chances are it's going to get worse. I mean, I think when faced with that dilemma about whether to strike deals with Trump or to investigate the administration, I think the Democrats will be naturally inclined to investigate, also because Trump seems to be egging them on. I think Trump's tweets signal that it's going to be a time of very bitter, bitter political conflict, more so than we've seen up till now. I think one of the lessons from the suburbs for Trump is that even if he pursues policies that are designed to appeal to suburban voters, like the tax cuts, they don't necessarily translate into big votes, because people are so turned off in those areas by some of his inflammatory rhetoric and by just the exasperation over the polarization of the country, that they are shifting away from him and the Republican Party. So that could give him some pause for thought. So, I mean, even if he did a big infrastructure bill, I'm not sure that that would really help him win back any voters. If some of the immigration rhetoric continues and keep seeing those kinds of things, people in those areas prefer calm, quiet lives in a strong economy, and I'm not sure they're thrilled to see this kind of return of political violence that we've been looking at, the anti-Semitism, and the tensions that are flaring up within families over politics. And so I think rationally he would do well to kind of tone that attitude down, but I'm not sure that he will be thinking that way.
Okay. And finally then, Jeff, as James's answer implies, even though Trump wasn't on the ballot, this was a kind of election about Donald Trump. We're all, I suppose, part of his skill is that we're all so gripped by this show. But in 2 years' time, if you had to predict, do you think Trump will have been impeached, or do you think he'll be re-elected or go down to defeat?
I'm of the school of thought that because we were so surprised by his victory in 2016, or a lot of us were, that we tend to overestimate his political popularity, his political skills, in a sense. To me, the kind of the most important thing to watch here is that in a booming economy with unemployment below 4%, this president who made himself the issue in this election, he lost the popular vote for the House by 9 percentage points. He lost by historic margins. He still has a path to victory in 2020, as you saw with, you know, victory in Florida, victory in Ohio and the governorship. So there is still a path to him to win the Electoral College. But my betting would be that he's more likely to lose than he is to win. Okay. Impeachment, on the other hand, seems extremely unlikely, almost a mathematical possibility, simply because of the way that Congress is laid out, the fact that the Republicans now have a very strong hold on the Senate.
Okay, well, with that thought, thank you very much indeed to Jeff Dyer here in the studio in London, to James Politi in Washington, D.C. We'll leave it there for this week. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.